The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day. The time now is 2:41. We'll go to 3:41. And I'll recognize an oral question period, the Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians pay too much for gas. The members of this caucus are not the only ones in this House who feel that way. Mr. Speaker, on October 23rd of last year, the member from Waverley Fall River Beaver Bank stated in a column which was published by Halifax Newsnet that governments need to take steps to ensure gasoline is priced as low as possible. And the member went on to argue, and I will table, that eliminating the tax on tax would correct what was, in his own words, an unfair taxation method. My question to the minister is this. Is the minister going to eliminate this unfair taxation policy?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the member for the question. It is a good question. It's a serious issue. Clearly, that measure is not included in this year's budget, but we'll welcome that suggestion and any other suggestion as we work toward building a next year's budget.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do thank the Minister for that comment. Nova Scotia has one of the lowest pre-tax prices in all of Canada. However, after all calculations are done, Nova Scotians end up paying some of the highest prices in the country. This province applies a 15.5 cents a litre flat motor fuel tax, regardless of what part of the province you are from, and then goes about putting further taxes on what is now an inflated wholesale selling price. For example, what starts as 70 cents per litre ends up costing Nova Scotians $1.141 a litre at the pumps. Simply by calculating HST before the flat tax, Nova Scotians could save 3.6 cents a litre. My question is, will the minister give all Nova Scotians a better deal and ensure that this inflated policy of tax on tax is immediately corrected?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is an issue of which I'm aware. It's an issue in which I personally have spoken about in the past. As I mentioned in my previous answer, it's not included in this year's budget. It's a good suggestion, and we welcome that suggestion and any other suggestion the opposition may have as we build the budget for next year. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
I thank the Minister, but we do still have three parts to our questions. Mr. Speaker, the Premier himself has argued this method of calculation. In an article published in the Metro dated April 25, 2008, the Premier stated, "I don't think tax on tax is fair," and I'll table that. And in this particular instance, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is correct. Tax on tax is unfair. Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Minister is this. In the past 103 days, why has the Minister not fixed what both the current Minister of Economic and Rural Development and the Premier have clearly said was an unfair taxation policy?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What we found when we came into office was a province on an unsustainable financial path in which the previous government had placed us. At this late stage of the fiscal year, Mr. Speaker, it was not possible nor desirable to introduce a completely new budget because of the stability that is required, particularly in times of recession. And that is why there were no major tax policy changes other than the commitments that were made during the election campaign, Mr. Speaker. However, we do welcome the suggestion. We agree with the member that it's an issue that needs to be addressed, and we look forward to dealing with it as we build next year's budget.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Deputy Premier. As you might have heard in my resolution, your Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal was exceptionally evasive yesterday when asked about plans to alleviate traffic chaos around the Fairview overpass. Mr. Speaker, up to 30,000 vehicles drive on the overpass every day. Metro Transit buses are practically crammed to the limit during rush hours. The Mayor of HRM saying there are no additional buses which can be put into peak hours of service. However, the Minister stood over there yesterday and said, make Metro Transit work for you. We understand and appreciate this section of overpass has to be replaced. No one is disputing this. But what about a plan to reduce the traffic chaos? My question to the Deputy Premier, through you, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of your government, can you address this issue today?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and through you to the member. Thank you for the question. Mr. Speaker, it's vitally important that we not only build but maintain the road infrastructure in this province. And we appreciate that there will be some inconvenience in this, but it's for the overall good of the residents and, indeed, the people that come into that part of Halifax. And we look forward to having the Fairview overpass repaired, and we look forward to having commuters come in a timely fashion, and we will do that in the most constructive way possible. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, information contained on the Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal website said it's expected the contractor will have to do evening and weekend work during some phases of construction. It is done in jurisdictions all over North America with heavy lighting. Work begins on projects at 6 p.m. at night and ends at 6 the next morning. My question to the Deputy Premier, why can't your government look into seeing how much additional evening and overnight work can take place, anything to lessen the crushing traffic congestion between now and March?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks through you to the member again for that question. We will endeavour to, if that's possible, within the confines of the contract that they have with the private contractor doing that, if that's possible. We are looking at all options, and if that's one, we would certainly take that as far as we can, and we appreciate his input. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My final question, Mr. Speaker, to the Deputy Premier. As mentioned yesterday, has there been discussion with the Public Service Commission about the potential of members of the civil service living and using this section of roadway possibly having an interim change in their work hours that would lessen the traffic nightmare?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and again, thank you to the member. The short answer is no, but the fact of the matter is that would be terms and condition of the collective agreement, and that would have to be done through PSC and the other bargaining agent, the Nova Scotia Government and General Employees Union. So we will tell him that right now that neither party has started that road down negotiations, pardon the pun, but we certainly would look at that if it was possible and if they had problems getting back and forth to work. But, Mr. Speaker, it is one bridge, as there is many bridges, Mr. Speaker, and I know in the members' riding, I'm sure, there's many bridges which we would try to repair in a timely manner. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, yesterday during question period, in an obvious attempt to deflect further questions around the caregiver allowance, the Premier stated, and I quote, "It is our intention to monitor the progress of this program as we go along and take that into account when we launch our own program next year," unquote. Mr. Speaker, that sounds like code for something, but we're not sure just what. I don't think I need to remind anyone in the NDP government that the structure and objectives around the Caregiver Allowance Program and their new self-managed care program are very, very different. My question to the minister is, does the minister plan to fix the Caregiver Allowance Program now and maintain it, or does she simply intend to replace it with another program of her own next year? Which one is it, Minister?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like to say to the Honourable Member that we will look at whatever developments there are and any programs there that are being delivered from the Department of Health. And where there are things that we feel are possible to do within a time frame and the existing budget, we will do it. Otherwise, we will be looking forward to the next budget year in terms of what's possible for the various programs that we want to deliver. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that doesn't help us necessarily to know whether or not a second program is being intended to replace the current one we're discussing today. But, Mr. Speaker, I refer back to the Premier's quote yesterday. The very foundation of understanding whether a program is working or not, as he refers to monitoring the program, well, the very foundation is getting numbers around that program. Mr. Speaker, we don't have the numbers available, although we've asked on several occasions. We need solid numbers to know whether the current program is in any way successful, or in fact just how unsuccessful is it. So my question to the minister is, when can we expect the minister to report to the House with the numbers of people who have applied and the number of people who have been qualified at this point to receive the Caregiver Allowance Program?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, through you to the Honourable Member, I would like to, and I will table these. We've been able to compile the numbers with respect to the caregiver program, as I indicated we would be doing. Mr. Speaker, currently 140 people have been approved province-wide for the caregiver program. 286 people are waiting to be assessed, and 276 people have been assessed and have been found not to qualify for the program. Mr. Speaker, we had anticipated that roughly 750 people would qualify for this program over a year, and based on these figures, Mr. Speaker, we figure we're just about on target. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very pleased to see that some numbers are available today. We've been asking for over a week for those numbers, and we felt they should be available and constantly monitored at all times. The program isn't done yet, so we'll be following that further to see where we're at. And I'll go back to my original question, Mr. Speaker, and ask whether the Minister could please tell us whether or not her intention is to simply let this program run for this year and then completely unravel it and replace it with her own program.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, there are many decisions to be made about this program and our own program that we promised in the election. But, Mr. Speaker, I can assure the Honourable Member that unlike her colleague from Glace Bay, who last week suggested we shouldn't have introduced any program, I think we're very pleased, and so are the people who have qualified, that the program is in place for those who will benefit from it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Deputy Premier. Mr. Speaker, it seems as though the people of Cape Breton Regional Municipality have no friends at all sitting around the Cabinet table these days, even the self-appointed political minister for Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, the municipality is faced with high taxes, low revenues, over $100 million in debt, and a declining population. But, Mr. Speaker, since the NDP has taken power, CBRM seems to be facing a great big wall of silence. So far, Mr. Speaker, the only answer to the concerns of the CBRM has been, we'll get around to it. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Deputy Premier is, would he tell the people of CBRM when they can expect his government to get around to it and actually have a discussion?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the member for his question. It's a valid one. Matter of fact, I was at a meeting just about 2 weekends ago with the mayor, and he didn't think it was important to ask me to have a meeting or any of my colleagues. But through you to the member, if he has the ear of his good friend, the mayor of Cape Breton Regional Municipality, I'd be myself, and I'm sure as the Minister stated yesterday, would be glad to meet with him. So we would be more than happy to meet with the mayor, but maybe he may be the best conduit. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, these are important issues that the CBRM is facing and bringing up, but it doesn't appear to be, and that's just been confirmed, that anybody in this government is even interested in listening. Mr. Speaker, the municipality argues that they're losing out on $20 million a year in equalization payments, and that's money that could go towards services and programs. So my question to the Deputy Premier again is, instead of just running into the mayor and not talking to him, why doesn't the Deputy Premier just pick up the phone and call the mayor, my good friend?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And now that we've established the friendships, it's extremely important that lines of communications be open. And I've talked not only to the mayor, but many members of council and people at the executive level. And it's important. But we also have to realize that certain aspects of the question just asked are before the courts today. And there are certain things that we're restricted to talking about. But outside of that, certainly we would be willing to talk not only to CBRM, but any municipality throughout this province. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just remind the Deputy Premier, Mr. Speaker, through you, that there's a very extensive phone directory on the CBRM's website, and if the government has lost the phone number, I'd be glad to oblige. Mr. Speaker, this seems to be an issue that's pretty low on the NDP's priority list, or maybe it's somewhere on the priority list that the Transportation Minister still hasn't bothered to ask for. But, Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Deputy Premier is, why won't he just tell the people of Cape Breton Regional Municipality why this government hasn't bothered to make this a priority yet? Or, again, will he simply just contact the mayor and request a meeting? Don't make the mayor come crawling, Mr. Speaker. Give him a call. Tell him it'll be sooner than later, Deputy Premier.
The Deputy Premier.
Well, I thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I want to thank the member for the very heartfelt question. Mr. Speaker, there is no win in making anybody beg for anything, Mr. Speaker. We are, as I said to you, Mr. Speaker, I've seen the mayor on many occasions since the election. I've talked to many of the council, and nobody has asked us for it. But you know what? I will call. And that if they wish to have a meeting within the context of the sitting of this House, we will try and contact them, or I will, and we will do it, and again, within the context of the sitting of this House, and we will do it as soon as we can. And I thank that member for the urging and the representation of his good friend, the mayor of CBRM.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Deputy Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday at Public Accounts, it was disclosed that up to nearly $11 million has been directly spent on the H1N1 vaccination effort, yet it doesn't even cover the cost of the delivery. There is no budget allocated for the potentially tens of millions in additional cost. Can the Deputy Premier inform this House where the money will come from Is it from the Minister of Finance's deficit slush fund, or can he detail what cuts will be made to cover the massive cost of immunization?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will ask the Minister of Health to answer that for the member.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr.
The Honourable Minister of Health has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, how the government is preparing for the H1N1 virus is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker, and I remind the members it's not a laughing matter. It's a very serious matter, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the member asks about revenue to support supplies and personnel to deal with the impending pandemic. The government has allocated revenue $54-57 million added to the restructuring fund, and part of that is contingency for the H1N1 virus costs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Hants West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, pandemic preparedness is a priority of Nova Scotians, and further highlighted by the Auditor General. Officials have worked hard to address this matter, but apparently Cabinet does not have a strategy. They have costed communications and delivery costs with Nova Scotians, yet we now know tens of millions will likely be needed to provide Nova Scotians with the protection they need and deserve. Mr. Speaker, again, my question through to you to the Deputy Premier. Can he please explain why Cabinet is so unprepared to deal with the H1N1 immunization strategy, even though health and emergency officials have their priorities straight?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I appreciate the question to me. I think for the best possible answer, I will put it over to the Minister of Health. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And through you to the Honourable Members, the Department of Health and the Department of Health Promotion and Protection has had absolutely no difficulty whatsoever in accessing resources required to prepare for the pandemic. We've had approval for more than $5 million for additional ventilators for all of our DHAs and the IWK. We've had approval for $1 million for masks. We've had approval for more than $4 million, our share of vaccines, Mr. Speaker. And I am confident, and the department is confident, that we will receive the necessary financial support in order to protect the health and safety of the people of this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Hants West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the lack of ability within Cabinet to handle a matter of such a public priority is concerning, to say the least. Up to 4,000 retired nurses could be called upon to administer the H1N1 vaccine. Yet the NDP Cabinet has no plan and no idea how to deal with the massive rollout of millions of dollars that they've not even budgeted for. Mr. Speaker, my question was for the Deputy Premier, but there's no sense going there. Can the Minister of Health then please explain, how they can possibly recruit, educate and deliver 800,000 vaccinations in time for Nova Scotians before the coming flu season?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'll tell the Honourable Member how we're going to be able to do this. We have the finest health care workers in the country, Mr. Speaker. Received absolute support and cooperation from all of the various health providers and the DHAs across the province, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the Chief Medical Officer is a very competent and well-trusted leader in this province. And Mr. Speaker, when the vaccine is available, I encourage all of the members of this chamber to get vaccinated and spread the word about the importance of getting the vaccine. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. Yesterday, the NDP government provided an unconditional extension to Encana for a rig-building program in Cape Breton. However, Mr. Speaker, the Minister also admitted that 280,000 person-hours of work involved in building accommodations, which were lost, will now maybe not be done in Nova Scotia. He doesn't know what will happen. Mr. Speaker, 75 jobs that Nova Scotians were promised for last year are now gone. So my question for the Minister is, why is your government ignoring Nova Scotia workers and not ensuring that our province is the primary beneficiary of our offshore resources?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for that important question. I'd like to correct the member with a couple of very salient facts here. Workers from Cape Breton, and my good friend from Whitney Pier, my colleague from Cape Breton North, is fully aware of the fact that there are jobs available because of the extension of an important deal with Laurentian. We're also talking about workers in Eastern Passage, workers in Eastern Shore, workers in Pictou, workers in Dartmouth. Those many, many people who greeted the Deputy Premier when the announcement was made about the work that was going to be made at the shipyards, tell those workers in those places and those men and women who have had the opportunity to work on these projects through Encana, tell them that they weren't pleased those days, particularly that day when the Deputy Premier was so well welcomed at the Halifax shipyard. Then you will realize that this government cares and provides work for Nova Scotia workers.
Thank you. The Honourable Member from Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the Minister would like to rattle off old commitments, but still has no explanation for the lost job yesterday that he has no replacement for. So they are jobs lost in this province for Nova Scotia workers. So, Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister also said that as part he knew about this, the requirement for this extension in June. He's added nothing to the extension other than a blanket extension with no new work. So if he knew about it then and wasn't going to ask for any other concessions from in Canada, why didn't he just make the announcement in June?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. I think it's really important that we look at, we have assumed the responsibility of a contract that was assigned in advance, and I don't think it's appropriate this time to stick a fork, if that's an appropriate expression, I apologize for it, from one way or another, to look at the contract. We would perhaps have done it differently. But this contract was a contract that we believed we can work with Encana. The people at Encana are good partners. They, along with the government back then and the government today, are trying to provide good work for workers from one end of Nova Scotia to the other. We have an open-door policy at the Energy Department. I look forward to working with Encana. I look forward to working with other people in the offshore. The key thing in here is, let's be positive. Nova Scotians are at work. Nova Scotians have some good jobs because of the working relationship with Encana, this government, and the previous government.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's no question that there are some good jobs for Nova Scotians in the offshore, but this government has failed. This minister had a choice, and he chose not to take it, to make sure that Nova Scotians are the primary beneficiaries of our offshore resources. Mr. Speaker, the minister went on further to say yesterday, as quoted in today's paper, that recovery will depend on the health of the economy in Western Canada. Well, Mr. Speaker, that sounds to me like that this government is waiting for Alberta to decide the future of Nova Scotia's economy and energy production. So I want to know, why is the minister letting Alberta set policy for Nova Scotia, and when will his department make it known that Nova Scotia is a strong province of its own, has important resources, a talented workforce, and we will be the beneficiaries of our offshore resources?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. At no time do any of the members on this side question the fact that we don't have a great workforce in this province, particularly when it comes to the offshore. I think we should particularly look, and let's be clear on the fact, the two-year extension that will help those jobs in Cape Breton are important jobs. That two-year extension is based upon the fact that there are some economic trends. These are on land. These are not on. These are rigs that are going to be built with the Laurentian Company with $1 million for each rig. They're going to be built in Cape Breton. They're going to provide jobs in Cape Breton. And that particular company in Canada is working very closely with this government. That's progress. That's jobs where we need them, in Cape Breton.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, the Deep Panuk project is one that the Progressive Conservatives are very proud to have facilitated with Encana Corporation. The economic downturn put the offset program with Laurentian Energy in Cape Breton to build land rigs on uncertain ground. Mr. Speaker, I don't have to remind the Minister of the merits of this offset agreement. However, I am encouraged that this new government has continued a Progressive Conservative business initiative by working with Laurentian Energy. Mr. Speaker, would the Minister please detail to the House the arrangements with that deal and also ongoing commitments from Encana to realize the full benefits for Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the member, I'm aware, of course, and I do appreciate the advice that previous government cabinet ministers have given me in particular. And I know that there are various things when it comes to the details of agreements like this that we have to work our way through. This is a particular project that has the endorsement because we do not have a patent on all the good ideas when it comes to something of this nature. This was an important piece that we decided that we could support and we could live with. It is a good idea. It is an original idea of the government previously. Now, the contract itself causes us some concerns. Perhaps there are some provisions that we can learn from. It has been a learning experience for us and for this minister, particularly when it comes to Encana. But I want to assure the member opposite, your advice, your expertise, your working relationship with the staff are all appreciated, and I thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I am encouraged that the Minister sees the merit in this good business program, and I expect he will continue the work on this initiative. But my first supplementary is to the Deputy Premier. Mr. Speaker, will the Deputy Premier commit to continue to work with Laurentian Energy not only to realize the completion of the Deep Panuk offset, but also to provide a revolving financing mechanism to realize future energy projects, opportunities not unlike those done for Irving Shipbuilding, Cherubini, and Secunda, to make sure they have the mechanism that this was intended to realize new opportunities in the future?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I guess the best way to put that through you to the members, I would be resident to say exactly 100% yes to something on the floor that you haven't seen. But in essence, the essence of that question we agree with, and we will move forward as the member from Cape Breton North and the member from Yarmouth. I had worked with both of those members when they were energy ministers, and they did a fine job, and they realized what this means to Nova Scotia in particular, what Laurentian means to Cape Breton. And we will do everything possible to help the economy of Cape Breton. And if that means working with these Laurentian and other groups, we will, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I do thank the Deputy Premier for his response. And I appreciate the proactive approach to this because it is very important to the interests of not only our economy, but the people of this province that work so hard and do a great job. Mr. Speaker, Progressive Conservatives recognize the cyclical nature of the energy sector. However, during a recession, the impact of global energy pricing has an additional negative impact. Mr. Speaker, my final supplementary is to the Minister of Energy. Would the Minister inform this House of what actions, initiatives, or efforts he has been taking to pursue new activity in our offshore energy sector?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know with the constraints of time, and you've reminded me in the past, and me perhaps particularly, that I have to be careful that I don't go on a great length. I'm many occasions allowed to talk for an hour, so I'll give you a few moments at this time. I want the member opposite to know that when it comes to issues of this sort, regular weekly meetings are held with my staff. And one of the questions we constantly look at, and one of the answers we continually are searching for, is what kind of initiatives can we continue to bring forth to make sure there's employment and initiatives in the offshore. I want that member to know, and all members of this House to know, and of course Nova Scotians to know, This is an important issue for our province. It's an important issue for not just Cape Breton. It's an important issue from one end of the province to the other. And I assure that member opposite we will continue to do everything that is possible with input from the expertise of people on my staff, with expertise from other people around the province. I thank you for
your time.
Thank
you, member. The honourable member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. During the recent election campaign, your party received a C grade for its post-secondary education promises from the Alliance of Nova Scotia Student Associations. The NDP promise of a graduate tax credit was evaluated by ANSA. The organization said they did not see this as, quote, a responsible use of money earmarked for post-secondary education, end quote. My question to the minister, will responsibility for the implementation of the graduate tax credit fall under the Minister of Education, thus being considered money for post-secondary education?
Sure. The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. That rebate is as much of a worker recruitment and retention tool as it is to keep graduate students in the province. There are other ways to increase accessibility and affordability for university and post-secondary education. So I just want to clarify that we see that as providing the well-trained and workers in this province. So it's more on a labor and workforce development strategy than it is to improve access or affordability of post-secondary education in the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, then might I respectfully suggest that that be considered under labour and workforce development and not, in fact, post-secondary education. In fact, both ANSA and the Canadian Federation of Students have made it clear that graduate tax credits do nothing to help students who cannot afford to attend one of our universities in the first place. A graduate tax credit will do little good if none of our students can afford to graduate. My question to the minister, will the minister acknowledge that graduate tax credits are an ineffective tool for making our universities and colleges more accessible and affordable?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can only repeat what I said in answer to the first question, that this is a labour retention and recruitment strategy, and certainly the former government has done, and we support efforts that they have made to make university education more affordable, such as putting more of the student assistance up front as grants, and providing additional funding to universities so that we can have a freeze on the tuition. But I think there's a little bit of confusion about the intent of the graduate retention rebate. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the problem is that not only do graduate tax credits not increase access to post-secondary education, but recent examples show they don't even work as a retention tool. In an op-ed to the Chronicle Herald, the executive director of ANSA stated that governments in Manitoba and New Brunswick have invested $100 million in tax credits like this, but no changes in retention rates have been observed since the credits were implemented. These are examples of cause leading education expert Alex Usher to conclude that graduate tax credits provide, and I'm quoting here, windfall gains to people doing exactly what they were going to do anyway, unquote. My question to the minister, will the minister acknowledge that graduate tax credits are not only ineffective as a tool to help gain access to post-secondary education, but they're also ineffective as a graduate retention tool?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, as it turns out, we have considerable numbers of students from outside our provinces attending our post-secondary institutions, and currently about 20% of them stay in the province. We feel that this graduate retention rebate will actually encourage those numbers to go up. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you for the Deputy Premier. On Tuesday afternoon during question period, when the Premier was asked about your government's slash-and-burn technique towards the rink revitalization program across Nova Scotia, he said, quote, the program had no criteria, no policy in place for administration. In fact, it was simply a line item in the budget. And I want a table for the Deputy Premier this afternoon. Perhaps he could make sure the Premier is given a copy of the Ring Revitalization Program guidelines, as well as the application form that was required to be filled out by all 79 arenas in Nova Scotia. My question for the Deputy Premier this afternoon is this. What does he tell members of his own caucus, such as the member for Queens or the member for Lunenburg, when they come seeking funding for improvements to their aging rinks?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the rink revitalization program, as the Premier mentioned the other day, was not meant to be an ongoing program, as the member from Argyle well knows. And in as much as response to other members of this House asking me about how would they go about getting initiatives for their arenas, that there's other programs in health promotion that they can go to. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The past president of the Recreation Facility Association of Nova Scotia, in an email September 21st, and I'll tell you that as well, said promises were made by the NDP throughout the election campaign and again all summer that there'll be no changes or deletions from the budget defeated on May 4th. As a result, the rink commissions went ahead. They've set their budgets. My question today to the Deputy Premier is, why did you break that promise and leave 74 arena managers scratching their heads and looking for $27,000 apiece?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I said in my previous answer, that there's money available to arenas in other programs in health promotion, and certainly we welcome each and every arena to apply for those programs and where there's a better criteria. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
The past president of the Recreation Association of Nova Scotia also said it is the goal of every community arena to keep ice rental rates affordable. And every member in this legislature should know the demand for ice time in every rink in Nova Scotia. It's absolutely crazy. The past president is also quoted as saying, he was sorry to hear the news. Government does not believe in that community rinks are much of a priority. My question is this to the Deputy Premier. Will you see what can be done to keep this valuable $2 million in place?
Come on. You can do it, Frank.
You can do it, Frank.
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I suppose in the questions, the one thing we agree on is the key role in all of our communities that these arenas play. And we want to support them, and we think the best way to support them are through the existing programs in health promotion, and we encourage each and every arena to apply through there where their criteria is best explained and more realized. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, I asked the Minister about any increased costs associated with gas regulation now that the responsibility has moved to the UARB, and the answer, Mr. Speaker, was no change. Well, Mr. Speaker, today is the big day. The UARB now controls what price Nova Scotians will pay to fill up their cars. So, Mr. Speaker, let's examine what has changed. For one, there will be at least two public hearings coming up that will examine issues of border taxation and promotions. And those public hearings are not cheap, Mr. Speaker. So let me give the minister another chance. Mr. Speaker, my question is, how much are these hearings going to cost Nova Scotians?
The Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, there are no additional costs. Those would be covered under the fees that are already associated. And that is a question that you would have to direct to the Utility and Review Board. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, contrary to what the Minister says, there are going to be costs associated with moving regulation to the UARB. And these issues that these hearings will address, taxation levels and border areas and the effect of promotions on the viability of rural stations, are not localized discussions. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister indicated that she is unable to tell us where these hearings will be located. Now, these hearings are important, Mr. Speaker, to all Nova Scotians, and participation is vital to their success. So my question to the Minister is this: what steps has the Minister taken to ensure that all Nova Scotians are able to participate in these important debates?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That is a very important question, and I thank you for asking that. One of the steps that we are taking is to make sure that there is a consumer advocate on the committee. And if a consumer advocate is not named, then we will make sure that that person is provided to that committee at this time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there's another change happening today. There are now going to be different people choosing what Nova Scotians pay at the pumps. A third change will be taking place in the coming days as well, Mr. Speaker, because the UARB is going to grow. In fact, the UARB is looking for two people to advise them on petroleum products with combined salaries of $145,000 per year. That's not all the change Nova Scotians will see, though, because for all the talk of transparency and openness of the NDP that they like to use, the actual price setting will still happen in a room, and it will still happen behind closed doors. Mr. Speaker, maybe a different room with different colors, but it's still in secret. So my question for the Minister is, since she has assured Nova Scotians that there's going to be no extra costs, will she tell us who in Service Nova Scotia she's going to lay off in order to balance out those two new salaries?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There will be no layoffs at Service Nova Scotia. There is a lot of work to be done at Service Nova Scotia, and at this time, two of our people will be seconded for a short time during the transition, but will be coming back. There is lots of work to do, and the people at Service Nova Scotia do that well. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour and Workforce Development. Nova Scotia Community College faculty have been in a strike position for several days after voting overwhelmingly in favour of strike action. Yesterday, it was announced that the Nova Scotia Teachers Union, representing those faculty and professional support employees, had accepted an offer from the community college to return to the bargaining table this Friday. Now, the community college is in agreement with the faculty that they should receive a 2.9% wage increase, but they cannot afford to provide it. My question to the minister: does the government agree with both the NSTU and the NSCC that a 2.9% wage increase is a reasonable settlement?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure the Honourable Member appreciates that, that as a Minister of Labour and Workforce Development and also the Minister of Education, I cannot get involved in ongoing negotiations. I have the utmost confidence that there are reasonable people on both sides of the negotiating table, and I look forward to them coming up with the result that's in their best interest and the best interest of Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when responding to a question in the House last week, the Premier said he would respect the collective bargaining process. But we know what the problem is, Mr. Speaker, and it isn't going to be solved simply by the collective bargaining process. Both sides have already agreed that the 2.9% increase is necessary for NSCC faculty, but the money simply isn't there. My question for the Minister, has your government provided additional funding, or are both sides just wasting their time at the bargaining table?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Collective bargaining has served our province very well. We have a very enviable and stable workforce track record. And I'm sure the Honourable Member appreciates the fact that I cannot comment or answer that question at this time. I can only repeat that I'm going to honour the collective bargaining process and stay out of it. And certainly we're going to respect the outcome of it. So we anticipate that reasonable people understand the tough economic times we're in and that they'll work out a solution in their best interests and in the best interests of all Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The member for Bedford-Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, should a strike occur, it will have lasting repercussions. Thousands of students will be negatively affected, semesters and exams will have to be altered, and students who have jobs lined up may be forced to alter their plans. The faculty at NSCC are leaders in their fields. They could be making a lot more money in the private sector, but they've chosen to enter the teaching profession and help educate thousands of individuals with lasting impacts for our economy. We must compensate them appropriately or else we risk losing them as they seek other opportunities. My question to the Minister, and not the Minister for Transportation and Renewal, is when will the government start thinking of the faculty and students and do what is necessary to avert a strike?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the Honourable Member in terms of the excellent contribution and work of the faculty and professional staff at the Nova Scotia Community College. And I have visited various campuses many times over the last several years, and I have the highest regard for their work. And I also understand the anxiety of the students and their families. All I can say is that collective bargaining has worked well. It's a process that my government is going to respect and honour and allow it to continue. And both sides understand that this province is on an unsustainable path and that we have to have reasonable people making reasonable decisions. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for Economic and Rural Development. I would like to know, and all members of the House would like to know, if this minister and his government supports RDAs across this province.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. We've been very, very supportive of RDAs for the last 3 months, and we will continue to be supportive.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As early as last evening and this morning, I've talked to RDAs across the province. I've talked to the RDA Association. They've asked for a meeting with this minister. The association's asked for a meeting with this minister. This minister has not had a meeting with the association yet of RDAs, or to any RDA that I spoke to as of late at noon today, he has not met with one RDA. They want to have a meeting with this minister, and they said that they would provide the coffee and biscuits if that's what he wants. So will this minister commit today that he will meet with the RDAs and the Association of RDAs, that is a volunteer board and made up of the business communities across this province, that He says that he supports small business in the province. So why will he not meet with the RDAs and the RDA Association?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And in response to the question, I would be more than pleased to meet with any RDAs in the province of Nova Scotia. We certainly recognize the RDA Association, and we'd be more than willing to meet with them. It's been a busy time. We get lots of phone calls, lots of requests for a meeting, and over the last 3 months, we've been trying to adhere to the requests that we receive. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the RDA Association and RDAs across this province is asked to have a meeting with this minister. He has refused to have a meeting with those RDA associations. Mr. Speaker, as early as 3 o'clock this afternoon, he has directed his deputy minister, instead of him, to meet with the RDA Association. That's shameful, Mr. Speaker. The RDAs are a great tool for this province of ours. They are business people spread out across this great province of ours. They have great knowledge into the business and what is needed in the communities across this province. Why will this minister not sit down with the RDA Association and the RDAs and their boards, Mr. Speaker, and offer a tool to them to grow the economy across this great province of ours?
The Honourable Minister of Rural and Economic Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will reiterate is that I'm more than willing to meet with RDAs as I have been with anyone and everyone. And, you know, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to see something in writing where I've said that I refuse to meet with an RDA or anyone for that matter, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection. Mr. Speaker, on July 31, 2008, an agreement was reached between the federal and provincial governments, which saw Nova Scotia receive $27.5 million over a 15-year period as a result of civil and criminal penalties that were levied against two large tobacco companies. My question to the Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection is, could she confirm that her department, the Department of Health Promotion and Protection, received $2.2 million this fiscal year as a result of this July 2008 agreement?
The Honourable Minister of Health Protection and Promotion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to indicate to the Honourable Member that I'm not really sure which lawsuit she's referring to. Perhaps she could restate the question or provide the information by tabling the decision that she's referring to.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I can table a distribution schedule of the amount of money that we were to receive as a province, the total amount for the whole country as well. But what I'd like to make a point of is that New Brunswick as well was receiving money. Ours was $27.5 million. New Brunswick was to get $22.6 million, again, over a period of time, 2008 until 2023, a 15-year period. And in New Brunswick, there was a great deal of fanfare about where they directed that money. So I'm wanting to know whether or not the minister is aware of the amount of money that we would have received as a province. And in 2009, it was to be $2.2 million. So I wonder if that helps to clarify what I'm referring to, and I'd be happy to table this distribution schedule.
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And through you to the Honourable Member, I'm not sure if we have received that money, but I will check into it and provide that information to the Honourable Member.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Speaker, in light of the Minister's answer, I think this becomes a little speculative, but I'd like to ask the Minister to track down that money, which I believe we've received in this province, and ask the Minister of Finance to direct it towards health promotion and protection, because that money is coming from a tobacco settlement. It actually comes from tobacco smuggling on the part of, or somehow involvement with smuggling on the part of large tobacco companies, and I believe it should be directed to some specific programs in health promotion and protection. So I'm asking the Minister if she would track down the money and get it directed to the health of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Minister of Health Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I certainly will track down the information. With respect to allocating it, though, directly to the department's budget, this is something that would have to be discussed, I think, more completely with my colleagues. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question to you is to the Minister of Community Services. In April, following a number of years of work when I was on that side of the House, I was proud to stand in Kentville and announce Nova Scotia's $155 million poverty reduction strategy.
Order. The time for oral question period has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.